So, Graham, I was trying to come up with a catchy title for this episode of The Message. I walk past your desk, or not too far from your desk each day, to leave the newsroom. I noticed for the umpteenth time the sign you have hanging there, and boom, there it was, the title for this episode, Beware of Cartoonist. How long have you had that sign hanging there?
It was actually a prop. I did a little filming thing for my Cartoonist Association. It was a prop. We're doing a thing on local cartooning, so I put it up then. And it hasn't come down since, so I guess people are still afraid of me.
On that note, I want to welcome to The Message Graham Mackay, the Hamilton Spectator's award-winning editorial cartoonist. And in fact, it occurs to me as I was preparing for the episode that the sign, Beware of Cartoonist, is funny. It also has deeper meanings or layers to it, just as your work always does. Because in fact, you occupy a physical space in the newsroom, off on your own, separate from the reporters. And you also play a singular role at The Spectator, which is to offer an opinion, a point of view on everything from politics to Hamilton's quirks and the vast canvas of human nature, and to do so in editorial cartoons. That's me giving my spin on how you might see your job. How do you see what you do?
Yeah, I occupy a very isolated corner of the newsroom, way at the other end, and by the exit door to the newsroom too. So there's a symbolic thing there.
Yes.
I guess I'm lucky enough to have a position that I have because it's sort of like a visual columnist, I guess.
Yes.
But I guess my job is to poke at the powers and do it in a depiction way, in a drawing, and it's a wonderful job that I have for sure.
Mm-hmm. And you've been at the Spec 22 years this September, is my math correct on that? It means you're a young buck compared to me. You start the Spec 4 months after I did.
Yes, but I bet you they probably gave you a computer, right?
They did right off the bat.
I didn't get a computer for like 3 or 4 years after.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it took like half a year to get a phone.
Yeah. Oh.
That was 1997.
Those were the perks back then.
Yes. That
was Kirk LaPointe.
Kirk LaPointe, exactly.
Who hired us both. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about the road traveled for you and how you do what you do in this age of Trump and Trudeau. And I was thinking, I feel the limitations of audio here. Your work is so visual.
Sure.
But Aisha Nasser, the producer of The Message, will post some of your work on our site and a link to your website, which I was going through, and there's a ton of material on there for readers, the archives. And
yes, I'm very proud of my website.
It's a great website. I wish I had something that showed some of my past work, you know, so that's terrific. But to start, you know, I guess I thought, you know, today's cartoon, and by the way, you create five editorial cartoons per week at The Spectator,
right?
And your work is nationally syndicated, so it appears online and in newspapers throughout Canada and sometimes in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so the cartoon today, just to take a random one because it's in the paper today, it features Doug Ford, and we have Ford in the background of the cartoon. There's a big carnival happening. Fireworks in the sky, and a carnival tent that's labeled SNC Lab Scam. Big party happening in the background. In the foreground, we have Doug Ford looking very much like a mob boss, standing over someone burying something in the dirt lit by car headlights, which is to symbolize what?
Well, there's some interference happening on both the provincial and the federal level, and you know, it's an edgy cartoon, and I could have gotten into trouble with that, and I had to like go to my editor Howard Elliott just to make sure that we wouldn't get sued because it's
pretty suggestive.
Very suggestive. You're saying what the premier is killing people off? Well, I guess in a metaphorical way, he did, or his deputy, one of his deputies actually fired the deputy commissioner of the OPP. So
right. Just this week, just, right?
Yeah. But I, you know, it's just interesting because we've been obsessed by the SNC-Lavalin story for weeks now, and you know, there's other things that are happening, and we as cartoonists just have to be careful not to get too obsessed with the media and keep our eye on other, you know, nasty things that might be happening. And I think what's happening in Ontario right now is it's fodder for cartoons for sure.
And that's a good, I mean, you know, you have And I've heard, I've seen some criticism of the coverage of LavScan, that the media is all in and everyone's now trying to do the other. Not to say it's not a huge story, which it is, but it's a good opportunity, I guess, for certainly for you to kind of shine the light somewhere else, like you're doing here.
Well, and you got to wonder, like, are people really focused in on the LavScan thing? And are they more focused on what's happening with Ford? I mean, I don't know. And until polls come out, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And maybe for the vast majority of people outside the bubbles that really follow these political things, nobody really cares. Mm-hmm. But I guess time will tell.
Would you anticipate, when you draw Doug Ford in this sort of manner, do you ever sort of expect to get an email or a call from someone who's a fan and not a fan of yours, perhaps, who's angry about the depiction?
I expect with my job that I'm not going to have, 100% happiness. I think a good cartoon, you're going to get as many people opposed as people who like it. So, I on the various social media platforms, I get an earful from people who are, totally upset with my cartoon. Mm-hmm. We get the odd letters to the editor. A lot of them I don't even see. They just cross Howard's desk.
Right.
And he protects me from seeing some of these angry emails and letters and whatnot. But, I think if you're not getting feedback, then you're not doing your job properly as a cartoonist.
Do you have thick skin as far as that goes? I mean, your job is to stir the pot. I think if I got a letter, taking a shot at my story, I'm probably more thin-skinned. I might feel defensive at first. I guess it would depend on the nature of it. But how about you?
I think I get more defensive when people obviously don't understand, and they show that they don't understand satire.
Right.
And they're not seeing the bigger picture, that sometimes you need to use certain metaphors and situations that cast affliction on certain people in order to skewer the person who's the power, right?
Yes, yeah.
And I think in some countries, like in France and Britain, they get that. But here, it's almost like it's a continuous kind of thing where you gotta, well, no, this is how it works here, and this is what satire is all about. But I can understand that even satire has to adapt to the changing norms and everything mm-hmm. that happens with society.
And satire is not polite.
It's not polite, yeah. And it's not fair either sometimes.
But by its nature, that's right. One of your favorite, strikes me one of your favorite cartoonists and friends in the fraternity of cartoonists, I suppose, is Michael
Deatter.
He apologized recently.
Yeah,
right? He did one of the LavScan cartoons where he depicted Jody Wilson-Raybould tied up with her mouth taped in a boxing ring with Justin Trudeau poised to take her on in the ring. So her hands are tied behind her back. Her mouth is covered up.
I did actually the almost exact same cartoon.
Did you?
Too.
Yeah.
And we were lumped into this whole sort of thing with hate and misogyny and that sort of thing.
Right.
I posted my cartoon online and Deatter saw it, and then he messaged me and said, I'm in the middle of doing the same cartoon.
Wow.
But I'm just giving you the heads up
that
this is going in my paper tomorrow. And he's on the Atlantic coast, so he didn't have much of a timeline there.
Right. It was in Halifax. That's
7
right.
o'clock in the evening. So I was like, we'll go ahead. And then everything hit the fan the next day after it was posted.
No, I saw on Twitter, I just saw a bit of it, but he apologized, and then he sort of, I don't know if he apologized for the apology, but people started giving him a hard time for apologizing. They said, you shouldn't have done that.
Well, I think the big difference there is that he's a freelancer, so he doesn't answer to a editor. My editor is Howard Elliott, and he cleared it. He looked at it, and he didn't raise any worry about it or anything. So, and there's been subsequent apologies since then, and they all come from freelancers who don't have those filters that, thank goodness, I have here at the Spectator, because I've never apologized for a cartoon.
You haven't? I was gonna ask
not
that.
Here. I've come close, but no. I haven't.
And maybe with that one, people were missing, the whole boxing analogy. Trudeau was famous, at least people who followed his career, for boxing publicly and all that sort of
thing. And the Liberal Party and his supporters have made a big deal. They, you know, he he punched out Patrick Brazzo, and it was, you know, look what he did here.
Yeah.
And all you can look at that and think, well, yeah, he was an indigenous guy too that he punched out.
That's right, yeah.
But, you know, it was taken as a positive thing, and it was an important thing because it was before he became prime minister, and a lot of people were saying, oh, he's just a weakling who only cares about his hair and his looks and selfies and that sort of thing.
Right.
So let's go and prove that he's a capable guy.
Right.
And I've used that in other cartoons, his punching acumen when dealing with Donald Trump and that sort of thing.
Right, right. And when he came to, the first time I covered him ever in Hamilton was when he came here and he did a big thing at the gym downtown where he put on a big workout.
Yeah.
And I was quite happy to sweat for the cameras. And
I'm kind of amazed that we as cartoonists haven't really capitalized on this whole thing because you can see the good in that, but you can also see the ugly side of being a boxer as well. And I think both Mike and I did that job as was expected in a satirist.
How often would you say an editor like Howard or Paul Burton, editor-in-chief, comes to you with an idea that they would like to see done, or an issue, say, that they'd like to see done by you in the paper? And how often is it just you? Percentage-wise.
They never come to me. I can tell you that. They never instruct me or tell me, oh, you gotta like lay off. Although in the early days, they would tell me to lay off. Way back when I started out, I came on and it was a different approach that I had towards my job. And I was scathing towards the mayor, who was Bob Morrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some nasty cartoons about him. And my boss, who actually happens to be Howard, Howard's been my boss.
Still, yeah, a long time.
For a long time, and I remember he told me, he said, "You got to back off on the mayor because he's starting to like badger us."
Right,
and I think that says something. There's something about it's easier to go after a politician who's in Ottawa or London or Washington, but when it comes to City Hall here. You know, these are people that you got to deal with on a
right. We have reporters that need to,
and reporters have to deal with them too.
Yeah.
So, if you keep it up, they're going to stop answering their phones when a reporter calls.
Right. So then each day, then the cartoon that is you picking the topic and giving your spin on it.
As I say, it's like you or Andrew or Jeff Mahoney. I'm giving the liberty of a columnist. However, you know, it hasn't always been that way. I mean, we've had different editors,
sure.
as you know, and they have different definitions on what my role is, and you know, I can fight against it, but you know, they're the ones paying me. So.
Right, right. Let's roll back a little bit to your road here. So you grew up in Dundas,
yes,
and attended junior art classes at the Dundas Valley School of Art.
Yeah.
And I was reading from a piece that the Spec ran when you were first hired, that's on the website, your website. You were a news geek as a kid and used to doodle in class and draw your teachers and classmates.
Mm-hmm.
And in grade four, drew the whole class and ran off photocopies for all of them on demand. Right?
Yeah.
Did this make you popular or not popular?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I still had bullies going after me and stuff like that. But if you're a pretty good cartoonist or an artist, you often are like a hit if you can use that art against the authority of a teacher, let's say. Right?
What cartoons or comics did you enjoy reading most when you were growing up back then?
You know, I didn't read a heck of a lot of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely into Mad Magazine and Cracked.
Yes.
Mad Magazine was, I loved Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably because it was parody, you know,
yes.
It was like an early form. It was I didn't know who the President of the United States was when I'm like 9 or 10 years old, but I knew about the, you know, being bombarded by all these products on TV I was thinking also of you know, Wacky Packs. Remember Wacky Packs?
Yeah, you get these little cards.
It's candy things, and you get gum, and then inside would be all these stickers that were parodies of products.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You know, instead of Captain Crunch, it was a sticker showing a box with Captain Crud. I think that was the germ of my fascination with just making fun of, you know, on a pop culture thing that extended to politics, which came very soon after that, I guess.
Right. Yeah, Mad Magazine, I was, as a kid, yeah. I would enjoy the parodies of movies.
Yeah.
Very highly detailed. They go through, you know, the plot of a movie and just ridicule the notions of it. And
Don Martin and Al Jaffe and Sergio Martin. Wonderful, wonderful cartoonists.
In the introduction to your book, which was published in 2017, which is titled You Might Be From Hamilton If, Scott Radley wrote the introduction to the book, that's the Spectator, Scott Radley, and he mentioned Mad Magazine, and he also said that he said that, you know, a lot of kids growing up probably wanted to be a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. And I was going to tell you that I can attest to that. Back in grade 5 or 6, I gave my speech when we all had to give speeches back in the day. You just stand in front of the class, give a speech. Mm-hmm. And I gave mine on how my career aspiration was to be a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. And I was a huge Peanuts fan. Charles M. Schulz was the whole thing. I had sketchbooks, but I couldn't draw. And so that set me back a little bit. When did you know that you wanted to draw and for a living and be a newspaper editorial cartoonist specifically?
Mm. Well, I've always drawn. I mean, I guess I'm the nerd who, instead of going out and playing football or hockey or whatever, I stayed in and drew.
Right.
But I guess, like I said, the parody I was fascinated with. I was a television junkie too, let's be honest. I mean, you know, with Mad Magazine, has also went to SCTV and Saturday Night Live.
I loved SCTV.
And
yeah.
A lot of these great comedy shows that would make fun of the politics of the day. So,
yes.
You know, you had Saturday Night Live, you know, making fun of the president of the day, which mm-hmm. they do so fine even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that made me wonder, well, what are they talking about here? So I guess I came of age to find the fascination politics when Ronald Reagan was president.
Yes.
And I'd also, that was the time when Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister, and mm-hmm. I would always hear the family discussions at the dinner table on Sunday night. My grandparents would come over and they would like freak out over the latest thing that Pierre Trudeau was doing to
right.
the country.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that started an interest in reading the newspapers, and by that time I was delivering the Hamilton Spectator, and I could open the paper and I'd see the wonderful works of Blaine, the cartoonist here for long.
Right.
And so that naturally went, well, what are they drawing in the Toronto Star? What are they drawing in the Globe? Mm-hmm. And so I just became aware of a lot of the cartoonists at that time period, the early 80s, and it's a lifetime fascination starting from there.
Yeah. It's interesting. SCTV was, I loved that. It was just so clever.
Oh,
and as you not just politics with shows like that or SCTV, but the powerful, the famous,
mm-hmm.
right? To be skewered and
exactly.
made fun of, you know, whether it was Bob Hope or whoever.
Guy Caballero.
Right? Yeah, I'd love to see that on Netflix. They got to bring SCTV.
Well, that
onto
would
Netflix.
Be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Political cartoons have been around a long time. If you're Googling, anyways, it suggests that the first one ever might have been in 1754 by Ben Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give the audience the visual, it's of a snake that's been cut into several sections to show disunity among the new colonies that were not yet the United States. And the caption is "Join or Die." And we were just talking before the show briefly about how you actually did a cartoon years ago that was a take on Franklin's cartoon.
Yeah, it was to apply it to the amalgamation of Hamilton.
Right.
So, you know, they were amalgamating all the colonies back at that time, and the threats were out there. Well, that was sort of the same thing that was happening back in around, you know, 1999 and 2000,
right.
when the province was compelling us to amalgamate. I did that cartoon and I showed it to the editor, and he didn't know what I was talking about so much. I guess typical journalist doesn't know the history of satire.
Back to the drawing board.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that one and your work and the best cartoons, editorial cartoons, show how carefully chosen words, a little bit of information can
mm-hmm.
convey so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just randomly going through your your website, maybe because this one appeared on my birthday, the one that's it's lamenting the end of summer, and it says, you know, R.I.P. summer, and it has, you know, these the death. What are they?
Right.
They're
Grim Reapers.
Grim Reapers carrying this pumpkin man,
pumpkin
who's heralding the pumpkin spice is back. And I just think it's awesome. It's just so much, you know, pumpkin spice, of course, is a great flavor, but it does signal that something is coming to an end, right?
I'm just around so many people that say, oh, have you had this beer? It's pumpkin spice. It's like, no, I don't want that pumpkin spice beer. Could you give me something? And then, you know, all the coffee shops were bringing in their coffee. So that's a perfect cultural thing that gets away from the politics that, right. Like I say, I know that there are people who are shutting out the politics and they're sick of it and everything. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for us to do some of the cultural references and sort of jab at
the things
we have to put up with every year, like pumpkin spice, whatever.
I love that stuff. And of course, the Christmas time, all the different flavors. I mean, it's like, yeah. What is that? You know, all the different, I don't even know what they are.
Well, the other thing, you know, it's on coffee. The other thing that drives me crazy is the roll up the rim thing. It's like a sport for me every year to come up with another, you know, let's mock the roll up the rim campaign, because it's just, I walk to work and I see the results of the roll up the rim, all these dirty cups all over the ground.
I've never done it. I'm proud to say. I mean, I prefer my lattes and stuff from elsewhere, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's whatever that makes me. I don't know, but you got to hand it to them though. They certainly tapped into something.
They do, but it's bit. You know, take some responsibility, because these cups are all over the place.
Yeah.
And I know there's been an outcry, and it's been getting louder every year. You know, this is the disposable, like this, the crap that you're adding to the landscape through this is just horrible.
Is one of your challenges determining how much information to provide in a cartoon? Some of your cartoons have layers and layers of background information and little bits and minutiae within the cartoon, and others have a very simple, what appears to be a simple message, although, as I say, as with pumpkin spice, simple, yet there's a lot to it that's kind of under the surface. Mm-hmm. Is that something you think about consciously, or you just kind of go with what's...
It depends on how I feel, but I guess it's kind of nice to be able to put those little Easter eggs in and just give the little extra fun for the viewer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a big fan of the intricate cartoons. I know there's a wonderful thing about simplicity of cartoons, but I think from time to time it's nice to do these elaborate things.
Yeah, where people can kind of dig into it and get what they can out of it, I suppose.
And
then, of course, then some people aren't getting half of what you're trying to convey sometimes.
Well, you know, if the gag is kind of weak, then it's, you know, I spice it up. Right. I pumpkin spice it up with more little details.
Now, you've won. I said you were an award-winning cartoonist. You're a two-time recipient of a United Nations citation, the Renan Lurie political cartoon.
Renan Lurie.
Cartoon Award.
He's a famous cartoonist from, I don't know where he's from, Egypt, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he's obviously very rich. He throws his money around and rewards people.
Yeah, which is fabulous. And then last year, you were nominated for a City of Hamilton Arts Award.
I was nominated. I didn't win.
Yeah. And so what you do is absolutely art, and it's punditry and commentary. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself more as an artist or a commentator?
I would love to do more art, and a lot of us cartoonists do. I would like to do more art. I like to do oil paintings. I look at our colleague here, Lee Munn, who does some outstanding artwork, landscapes,
yes.
And things like that.
Yeah.
And boy, that would be a dream of mine to go back and... go back to the basics of what I learned at the DVSA, and you know, and take a sketchbook out there and draw stuff, because that's what I used to do that. I used to go out and to museums and draw, you know, vases and statue heads and things like that, and it's a wonderful therapeutic thing to do.
Just quickly back to the politics, something I meant to ask you earlier. I'm sure there are followers of your work or people who dip in on your work on occasion who think they can pinpoint. There are people who think they can pinpoint the Spectator's political leanings if we had one, which I don't think the paper doesn't. I don't think it has a particular leaning, but I'm sure there's some who think they can label you on along a spectrum, and they'd probably be wrong no matter what they say.
Yeah, but, good luck.
So
I don't even know where I am.
That's what I was gonna. Yeah. So yeah, they are.
No, I think one thing that drives me crazy is partisanship. It drives me nuts, because I will put something on Twitter, and I can easily predict who's going to be weighing in and saying such and such. But you know, there's your example right there. You've got a Doug Ford cartoon there, and mm-hmm. I'm making fun of a guy. He happens to be a progressive conservative, but the day before I'm making fun of Justin Trudeau. He happens to be a federal liberal. So, mm-hmm. and then I'm making fun of Trump, and then I'm making fun of all kinds of political parties. Again, it isn't about partisanship to be a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. It's, put that all away. It's all about like jabbing the powers.
Right.
It just so happens we are in a really good situation now where we got a conservative in Queen's Park and a liberal in Ottawa.
It's kind of an ideal situation for you.
Yeah, it is. But I think in the past I might have come here with a bit of a partisan leaning towards the center right, but I can't. I'm not there at all. Mm-hmm. I think over time and being around smart people like we have the Spectator, you know, you learn something.
Yes.
And and I certainly have being here.
You know, I've talked about how this is such a rich time for cartoonists with in Canada with Justin Trudeau's reign and the dawn of the age of Trump. Looking back to other periods in your career to this point, is this the most interesting time or have they all been interesting?
We're having some great scandal time right now, but I mean, in 22 years, you can think back. I mean, there's the gas plant scandal, the mm-hmm. Gomery scandal, the mm-hmm. you know, money in bags that Mulroney was passing to Karl-Heinz Schreiber, and mm-hmm. Look at the scandal happening in Washington right now. So I think what happens is you get a series of scandals adding up, and that's what lends itself to the eventual defeat of a government.
Right.
I don't know if this SNC-Lavalin thing is going to topple this government. I doubt it will. I think he's in a life of a government. There's a series. I mean, mm-hmm. we had a Liberal government in Ontario that was very plagued with scandals.
Yes. Yeah.
And it lasted for how many terms?
Yeah.
And now we got a new government that's starting up its own scandals. So. Yeah, scandals exactly. are just part of life, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it's the fuel for the fire
exactly.
For a cartoonist. So, well, Graham, you know, I'm fascinated by the work you do. As I've already pointed out, I'm envious because you're doing what I wanted to do when I was a kid, and but I think it's great what you bring to the Spectator, adding color and perspective and wit to our pages, and you're one of the best in the business, and that's in Canada and the U.S. So I want to say thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks. It was a pleasure. Thanks, John and Aisha. Thanks.
And thanks to the audience. And again, you can see Graham Mackay's archives and other information on the link that we'll put on our podcast webpage. And my thanks to Aisha Nasser, as always. And we will talk to you later on The Message.